ugly ain't the half. Look at you. Well, you got blue teeth and you only got two teeth, but I kinda like to see you smile. And it appears that over the years you've turned into a big old steaming pile. And she said, yeah, I know I ain't no supermodel. I said, you ain't a hand model, baby, but that's fine.
Welcome, everybody, to the Justin Robert Young Podcast. My name is Justin Robert Young. As I'm sure you are able to tell, this is not an episode that was recorded live. This is going to be one of those recorded episodes. It's going to be another interview. You might be like, Justin, this is bullshit. You haven't done a regular show in a while. You did one, and you had to split it into two, and before that, you did it with Brushwood. This is highly irregular. Well, you're right, and I apologize. This is the crunch time, baby, as every fucking project that I have over the last few weeks comes to a startling crescendo over the next month and a half. So please bear with some of the patchwork stuff that we are doing on the show. But in the meanwhile, I do have a special guest, a very special guest. In fact, I would say she is the reason this podcast exists, because there would be no jury show without a Justin Robert Young and without Gloria Young, my mom. There's literally no me. Welcome to the show, mother.
Aw, thank you, honey. I'm so happy to be here.
Are you?
Yes, I think so.
Have you heard the jury show before?
I think I've watched a little bit of it, yeah.
Where I'm just yelling by myself?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think that that's, like, what is your first, like, let's say I dedicated all my life to just talking by myself. Into a microphone. Do you think that that's
God,
like...
God bless you. I think that's awesome.
Well, it's a little egotistical. I always kind of like... I sometimes wonder whether or not it's just unbearably egotistical.
Well, everything that you do, to some extent, is
egotistical. Unbearably egotistical.
But, you know, that's what I admire so much about you, is that you just love to promote everything that you think and feel and... You share your thoughts openly and with everyone and everything that's happened in your life. And I think that's an incredibly brave aspect of today's generation. And you, especially you, epitomize that.
Do you think that, has there ever been a point in which you've seen me say something or seen a product that I put out, like a podcast or an album, and you've listened to it and you just cringed and just like, yeah, I mean, like everything was fine, but it would have been nice if that never got released.
Well, in my timid ways of the past, pretty much everything you do is like that. But, I applaud you, your bravery and your strength and your courage and your...
There's gotta be one, because I can see you thinking. There's gotta be one thing that I did or put out that you were just... Not because you have always been extraordinarily supportive. Mm-hmm. There's really nothing that I've done that...
I try not to micromanage your life or...
Well, I think what's key is that you've never stopped giving me advice on stuff. And you've never, like, held yourself back from saying, you know, especially maybe 5-6 years ago before things started to kind of financially pick up.
Yeah.
You know, there was a lot of, whenever I would bring some new wild-eyed internet idea to you, there was a little bit of like, okay, like, that's fine.
Are you going to make money?
Yeah, like, is this something that actually pays off?
Yeah.
And I was like, no, you're making up on down the road, millions of dollars, millions of dollars.
Yeah, that's true.
But there's gotta be something. There's gotta be some time that I said something that was just over the line, and you were like, no, this is. I mean, like, I won't tell them, but like, I kind of wish this didn't exist.
You know. I have to say that I think you came into the internet world right at the right time, because you were that age of like a, you know, an early teen where everything just intrigued you and you just kind of, I could just see the gears in your brain just like wheeling and working. And I honestly think that you really, you know, captured everything that could be had and done on the internet. Like, I mean, the things that I couldn't even think of or think about or conceive, you... No, I mean, I don't think there's anything that you've really done. No.
Jerking off, like,
no, I mean, cum all stories, that. Like... It was all hilariously embarrassing to me. And but if it wasn't embarrassing to you, what did it matter? It didn't really matter. It's yeah. like, it's those are things that everybody does, and you just had the bravery to speak it to the world and yeah. share it with the world. And that's
you know that you know that you're different in that though, right? Like that a lot of people like they take this kind of stuff a little bit more personally, and
of course, you know, because I've had
people that aren't my mom that have come to me and told me
that's embarrassing. That's too much across the line,
or even in praise to be like, oh my God, I can't believe you did that. Like yeah. you know, and
I can totally understand that people would be taken aback by some of the things that you've said and done and spoken about of your personal situations, but the bottom line is everybody does the things that you have shared and spoken about, and everybody thinks,
yeah, this is it. Yeah, I'm the only one.
How could I ever have said that publicly and admitted these things? And I think that's just an amazing talent. You and Ashley, I mean, both of you have shared so many personal aspects of your lives that I think it's to be applauded. I'm totally impressed by it all.
All right.
Again, okay, I'm your mother.
No, it's fine. Yeah. Listen, let's not, I mean, as much as I am a raging egomaniac on my one mic show, having my mom on to tell me that I'm special, let's move on to something that, we have never discussed on a podcast. We've discussed it privately. Mm-hmm. But maybe the most resonant thing that I have ever done on the internet was on Night Attack. Mm-hmm. When out of the blue, my father, your ex-husband, emerged from the briny deep of Facebook after, it had been popular knowledge within our family that he was dead.
Yes.
Or assumed dead.
Yes.
People saw my reaction on Night Attack. If you've never watched or listened to it, you can go back and listen to Night Attack, Ghost Dad and Ghost Dad 2, which are two back-to-back episodes. Mm-hmm. And you can see my frame of mind from the moment it was there. But you... obviously have a different related yet I think almost more personal kind of experience with the whole Ghost Dad thing. Like what was your first impression when I first called to tell you about it?
I was shocked, of course, but then I became fearful.
Yeah.
I was very fearful because of the things that had happened in our past. And so I envisioned him showing up at my door and doing something evil. And of course I became fearful.
Yeah.
But then I thought, you know, you've been through all of this. It discard those fears and
well, here, let's kind of get back into that for a second though, because I think it's very interesting that how our human brain works. Mm-hmm. Where by the number, like by the facts, right, there's probably very little reason why Dad, even at his most despicable and violent toward you as he was at the end of your marriage or the end of your relationship, or as creepy and determined and as disregarding of boundaries as he was during your divorce, where he was either, you know, aggressively needling you
or yeah. being evil again, right?
He, I mean, just by even physiology of hormones. Like, he's likely to be less dangerous as an old man than he was as a middle-aged man,
mm-hmm.
right? But yet, it's almost like, you know, for me, it felt like a literal, like, person coming back from the dead, and mm-hmm. everything that you'd buried in that coffin, all of a sudden just gets released. Did you have a similar
feeling?
Absolutely.
It was like a Pandora's box being opened, and, you know, all of a sudden, all of those fears and those feelings that I had buried and discarded for years and years and years, all of a sudden they came out with the open box.
And, was it the fear that surprised you was still there? Like, what was the emotion that you felt rushing back to you that you now in hindsight look back and you're like, oh, wow, I didn't realize that I hadn't really dealt with that, or that was still unresolved and came back into my life when he did?
I mean, it was just the fear of when you have someone that intimidates you to the extent that he did, and you know, personally and physically and mentally tried to overpower me the way he did, and I was much younger than him, so I was easily influenced. But, you know, all those emotions that I had thought I had totally overcome sort of came back. But the important thing is that it didn't last very long.
It was quick.
Yeah.
Like, it was just, it was like all those old fears tried to find parts of your life to fit back in, and they just didn't find any.
And I wouldn't allow them to find me. Yeah. I wouldn't allow them to fit back in. I just simply said, no, I've dealt with this already. I've dealt with this fear. I've dealt with these issues. I've already discarded them, and they are not going to control or affect my life again. But what really did bother me was I saw how much it was, you know, you were sort of taken aback, and you are never taken aback.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, you know, and I think you, because you were older than Eric, I think it really did have all of the things that happened, which you've spoken about so much on Night Attack and, you know, other different podcasts and things. You've shared so many different aspects of that. You know, I think that you too sort of dealt with all of that and kind of, you know, cycled it through your brain, and it went out. You dispersed it.
Yeah.
And
but its effect on me felt weird to
me.
You. That that made you so. Once the, like, you know, the fears.
Once the initial fear that I had to deal with went away, the motherly aspect came in, and it was like, okay, I see my son is hurting, and I don't ever want my children to be hurting. Or so those. You know, that was what my initial concern. But then when I saw your final resolution on the second episode of Ghost Dad on Night Attack, I could not have been more proud. It was not only a catharsis for you, but a catharsis for me. It was like, wow. He not only did he deal with it, he ate it up, chewed it up, spit it out. It was awesome.
So let's talk about the public nature of that. Because let's say I wasn't a podcast host, and this just happens to us personally. It mm-hmm. is a family drama that doesn't mm-hmm. have mm-hmm. a spectator window on it. Right?
Mm-hmm.
How do you think it plays out differently?
How do I think it plays out?
Or does it?
Differently. Well, I, you know, what I have started to realize with listening to you and Ashley and all of your podcasts is that everything that you speak about and share with your audience is, it's a way of dealing with those emotional issues yourself in your own personal life.
Yeah.
And you actually use that, you speak about it almost like some people go to a psychologist for counseling.
Yeah.
You almost use your audience as like a tool to share your emotions And then you get feedback. You get feedback from your audience, which I think is awesome. I mean, all these people, they sit and they listen and they give you, they come back with comments and, you know, they either give you negative or positive, but one way or the other, it's feedback.
Yeah.
And it's, you have used that outlet as a way to share those emotions that in the past people would bury.
Yeah.
And it would disturb their lives potentially down the line.
I think that the bones of it would have been the same. I think that I would have made, I mean, obviously I was the person to be in contact with him. I would have probably had the same, would have sent the same emails, would have come to the same resolution. What I think would have been different is I think it would have taken longer to really get over.
Mm-hmm.
Because it wasn't, I mean, it was kind of a thundering sort of climax.
Yes, like, it was.
Like when you
totally.
End, when it's a literal episode of a show with an end and you make a big fiery speech and then you're done with it.
Right.
That kind of feels like we're done with
it. It's done. Right?
If you just send an email, if I send the email like I send the email from my hotel, you know, I think that there's probably a little bit more that you have to kind of process.
Things linger, you know, in your mind and in your thoughts, and they may not, you may not feel the same catharsis as I felt, and I think you felt with that final episode, that second episode of Night Attack.
And even just to send to family. Right? Like, I mean, like, you've sent that episode to family.
I've sent that to so many people. I've even had, we were at the Marriott Harbor Beach one day
with
my neighbor and her friend who had also been in a similar situation. And I'm like, oh, you have to hear my son. And my neighbor's like, oh, you have to hear him. It was so great. It was so awesome. I actually pulled out my Apple headphones and hooked her up on my iPad and pulled up your Ghost Ed 2 episode, and she listened to it. She listened to
the
all
whole
18
thing?
All 18 minutes of your final
my
thing.
Rant, yeah.
And she was laughing and smiling and nodding towards the, you know, throughout the whole thing, and she took out the headphones when she was done, and she's like, that was awesome.
Yeah.
You know, and everybody that I've sent your final Ghost Dad, that episode to, has been like, oh, you know, they were all feeling your pain and your anguish and everything that I think you had shared, really all the emotions that we all went through. I think everyone felt it. And, I mean, they were there with you. I mean, you brought them into the whole, you know, it was a personal thing, and you brought them in.
Well, and
then that, you resolved it.
Well, but that's also part of just like the healing process. Like, mm-hmm. you know,
it is
that
no
other people
it.
Know it. And that's it, listen, all the elements of fear that you had about
mm-hmm.
Dad
mm-hmm.
happened in large part because there was a closed loop. He could say shit to you
mm-hmm.
and you wouldn't tell people about
mm-hmm.
it.
That's right.
Like, and fucked up things happen in closed loops.
Yeah, they do. You're
you know?
Right.
This is why I'm afraid of small towns.
You're absolutely right.
Because, like, it's just there's something mentally damaging to putting up walls around your life.
Where you can't release the things that are disturbing you.
Because it's like, if you were in a situation where, like, you know, you should be able to, obviously, elements of discretion understood.
Right.
Right? But you should be able to say everything that your significant other says to you to your friends.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you should be able to accurately describe your fights. Even
right.
if shit that comes out is mean.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like,
mm-hmm.
like, you should be able to say, yeah, I you know, I was an asshole and I called her a bitch and I said something about, you
right.
know, like her not working enough and that was fucked up in me, but
and it
here,
hurt her,
here was
or
the
she
underlying. Here was the
way.
Underlying thing. We were arguing about this. Should be able to say Eric.
Right.
Like it's those, and like it's the fucking corrosive element of humanity. It is just the runoff of a great, beautiful engine that makes dreams come true. It's just that those fucking like, and I'll get pissed at my friends, and I'm not gonna name them, but like, you know, when I, you know, I hear like oh, it's like this is a text this person sent to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, no, you're saying that with implied silence.
Right.
You're saying that in a way that now you'll be pissed if she forwards that on to somebody else.
Right.
Like, That's the worst. And to be honest, I strive to live in a world where everything that I ever say will eventually be public, you know? Like,
well, and to serve a purpose.
Well,
to serve a purpose, because
I mean there are a million little purposes in life.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess, you know, I still have this idealistic mindset of like, I really just want to do good. I want to live an honest, content life. And sometimes in order to accomplish that, you have to take some steps or say things that may not be pleasant.
Yeah.
Because let's just face it, life is not always perfect. And sometimes, and there's a lot of other people that you're dealing with that have had God knows what circumstances in their life. And, you know, there's that old saying that says, you know, most times when people are evil or mean or they say nasty things, it's not because of you personally. It's usually because of the problems they have in their own life and the issues that they're dealing with. So you always have to kind of keep that in mind of like, what kind of battles is everybody else dealing with? But at the same time, it's like, you know, I just want to live a good life where I say things that are honest and true from my heart. And sometimes I don't always make everybody happy, I guess is the bottom line.
But that's ultimately, you can only make the people that
really matter to you happy.
Well, and you and can't yourself. Even make them. You can't make them and happy. Yourself. You know, like the way you can contribute happiness in the world is being a happy person.
Yeah.
That's the true. Only way.
That's true.
You can't manufacture it.
No.
One last thing, we'll wrap up this yes. ghost dead conversation. You mentioned the point of like, you know, you have to be mindful of the fact that other people are going through their own struggles. And that's mm-hmm. a lot of the reason why we get a lot of the fucked up shit in the world. Mm-hmm. Understood. Mm-hmm. I've always tried to be empathetic about that.
Others,
and,
right?
And, you know, whenever there's, especially, you know, on the internet, because we generally collect around other like-minded people, there is definitely a culture of kind of demagoguery of like, yeah, politically we see it all the time that like for the right, there's no such thing as a smart, caring liberal. They're all just, you know,
out for themselves or whatever.
Well, yeah, no, that's usually the other way, but yeah. But you know, liberals are bleeding hearts and they don't fucking know their heads from their assholes. They don't know what the real world really is. And for the left, the right is all greedy racists and yada, yada, yada. And so you just get, I'm sure, on as, you know, being a woman of your age on Facebook, this is probably 90% of the experience is just somebody putting up some fucking political thing
right.
and then a 90 comment like, right. like we're really trying to solve the meaning of flags, like, you yeah. know, on Facebook.
Or whether or not you should say God in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So with Ghost Dad, mm-hmm. that was a situation where I tried to not be a hypocrite and had to reconcile, because there was certainly a part of me that was like, this is a frightened, scared old man looking for peace.
Right.
You
That's
know?
It's true.
And,
yeah, you
and,
had a little, there was that little sliver of sympathy in there.
And I think there should be, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and there was a part of me that was like, you know, listen, he doesn't know how to react. He's, you know, for beyond his, whatever his own sins are and the sins of his father before him, who was a gigantic, charismatic asshole, not like, you know, his firstborn son.
Not unlike.
He everything that I wanted him to say, if I were to break it down and say like, hey, why don't you just say fucking,
this.
Lead off with, so I'm sorry.
Sorry.
Like, and I would like to have a relationship with you.
Right.
I understand that I'm coming in from a fucked up position.
Right.
I would like to do right. What can I do?
Right.
Because even he didn't ever say, I'm sorry.
No, I know that. He never
literally,
said he's sorry in all the years I knew him.
Well, but even that initial thing doesn't need to be, I'm sorry. It just
right.
needs to be, just point me in the direction. I want to have a relationship. But then what hit me was this. It's like, yeah, I could take that leap. I could take that leap and say, he's a frightened old man. He doesn't know how to say these words. Let me try to teach him these words.
Or guide him into saying that.
Guide him into saying these words.
Right.
And then what kind of broke me in that was realizing that that's literally what you did for your entire marriage.
Yeah.
Your entire marriage was probably, and I'm asking you, this is a question, not a statement. Like, in my mind, I was like, no, this is probably, Mom knew his humanity, knew that on some level he was a good, caring person when he wanted to be, and probably spent her entire marriage and her entire relationship with him trying to guide him into saying the things that she wanted him to say, because you always just want to make the excuse, like, oh, well,
his dad was fucked up. Well, yeah, you know, this and that and the other. Yeah.
So let me just try and guide him into doing the right thing. I mean, and he took advantage of it a million times.
Unfortunately, anyone that knows what it's like to deal with someone who is addicted, that's called enabling.
Yeah, that is the definition.
That's the definition of enabling. You always give them the benefit of the doubt, and you always think, okay, I know that they're, you know, they have this true goodness within them, and you just are forever optimistic that, you know, they're going to do the right thing and say the right thing and feel the right thing and act the right way. But unfortunately, the addiction is always much stronger than that direction in their lives, and it just doesn't happen.
The other thing is that, you know, to bring it back, the only way that you can make a happier world is if you yourself are happy. And that was it. It's like, if it was just that, it's like,
I had to just step away,
like,
and completely
just
disconnect.
No way. And also, it also didn't hurt that, like he decided to butt in, like, right at the point where we were, like, starting, like, you know, this is a very busy year for us.
Yeah.
Like, so I was like, eh, don't, like, if I fucking wanted to have a new relationship, if he came in and was fucking A+, it was just like, hey, everything you've wanted to hear from me since 13.
I'm saying it
right now.
I'm going to do it. I'm
going to
say it.
By the way, I've been saving up for the past 13 years to pay your mom back the back child support that I never paid. Like, and he's like, I'm going. I've served.
I'm doing everything right
now. I've cleared my warrants in Florida. Like, I've served my time with the state. I've gone through fucking recovery.
Right.
You know, if he had done that, I'd be like, yeah, man, I got like 2 Skype calls until until September. So, like, this is really great that we're, like, reconnecting as father and son. But, like, homeboy, you better fucking
set a... Your timing's not so good.
You need to set a G-Cal because we're going to need to fucking plug this shit in way in advance. Maybe by December.
I know.
But, yeah, there was just no time.
It was all very telling.
It was all
very telling, and it was just very appropriate, I think.
All right.
It had to happen.
It did. Well, you didn't have to come back from the dead. That was the most fucked up part. No. The most fucked up part, and really...
No, but actually, the fact that we finally have closure, the fact that you and I and Eric have closure...
Yeah.
And again, I just have to comment about your awesome Mother's Day tweet.
Oh, yes.
About the fact that, you know, you and me and Eric were versus the world.
Yeah.
From 1983, and that was brilliant inspiration. And when I read that today, I'm like, you're just so spot on, because there is nothing greater to inspire one than just the real life lessons that just make you go, wow, I see what I have to deal with and what I have to do.
Well, what we went through, you know, it was very transformative to me. And the fact,
as it should be.
And the fact that it was the first lesson I ever had that not all human systems
always function properly.
Well, or are fair. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you were a part of what kept you in the marriage for as long as it did was the idea that for
the family,
for
unit.
Dad, also, I mean, but the fear, here's where the fear comes in. The fear is that the worst thing he could do to you would be to put you out with no financial support from him with 2 kids.
Mm-hmm.
That was a punishment.
Mm-hmm.
That was the fear of, like, well, like, I can't step out of line. I can't say this.
Right.
Because then I'll be alone with no financial support
and two kids. Young boys, right.
And so it's like, that was, And that is, you know, obviously laden with gender bias. It's laden with the way that we look at single mothers. It's laden with how we look at...
It was against all odds economics. At the time.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And like, you know, this isn't to say because you cannot on the internet talk about how your struggle is the worst struggle without having somebody send in
I'm sure there were a zillion people that have struggled similarly or worse.
But what I do know for sure, and I think can be universal, is that when you are at the other end of that system, when now you are the person in a world where, like, you know, listen, people are still kind of shitty about single moms. Mm-hmm. You know, like, that's not looked at as like a super cool thing,
right?
Especially back in 80?
In the early 90s.
The 90? When did you get divorced?
91.
Mm-hmm. Like back then, you know, it's not super cool. It wasn't like, you know, we see single moms kind of fail all the time. And we don't really, for whatever reason, care about them as much as people who have, you know, both parents. So,
right.
You know, and then the idea of like, okay, well, you got to work and, you know, what was beginning to be clear to me when I was a kid and is very clear to me now is like, you don't ascend as high in corporate structures as I think you should. And I think that your skill and experience having been, you know, in the field you're in, dictates for as long as you've been. I think if you were a guy, it would be a lot easier to climb the corporate ladder.
True.
And it's like, well, this is not given to us was kind of what it was the mode of my childhood.
Right.
From when you broke
nothing
up with that.
Nothing is given to us.
Zero.
Nothing.
Like jack shit. And that's also recognizing where things are. You know, we have a strong family structure. Mm-hmm. You know, even beyond, you know, dad, there was, we still had grandma and grandpa that became huge elements of our lives.
Which were, you know, huge support system that we could not have done without.
Even bigger than they were before. You know, and so recognizing, okay, so we have this. We have, you know, listen, we're not rich, but we're not poor. You know, like there's always, there was a little bit of money to just kind of ease things along a little bit. But like the idea that like, no, you want to know what? Like sometimes systems are really rad and sometimes systems are in there for a reason and they solve problems and they have solutions. But when it's just me, you and Eric and you know, like the one of the biggest thing, I think I've told you this before, most transformative element of my life in terms of responsibility and discipline.
Yeah.
And lying to yourself to deluding yourself to make things easier.
Right.
Was when we were living in San Diego. You had just gotten divorced. And, you know, at school, kids fucking they're sick and sometimes they're sick. And you always understand the kids with the soft ass parents because they're always able to just stay home because they don't feel like
and
it.
Do anything they wanted.
So every once in a while, you know, I'm like, oh, mom, I'm sick. And you're like, well, you're going to school for the first half. And then if you're still sick by lunch,
you call me.
But just know that you better be puking. Like, I'm going to ask the nurse whether or not you threw up. I'm going to ask the nurse whether or not, like...
Or you had to have 103 temperature. 100,
you better be temping out. Because there's going to be no, I'm just feeling bad, you know, soft-ass bullshit. And that's it was like, listen, there's a lot of, in my own life now, especially as independent self-employed elements of my life. And even with the Go Game, it's a lot of self-discipline.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of, I just want to call in sick today.
Yeah.
Like you have a lot of that.
But hopefully those like little lessons from you as a child,
it was just an understanding. It's like,
I can't do it. I can't, I gotta go.
Well,
go in.
And also it's like, it was just like, that's not for us.
No, it wasn't an option. Really, it wasn't an option at the time.
And that we don't get that.
No, we didn't have that privilege.
And like, I'm sure there's a billion kids that had that.
Yeah.
That were fine. And they're, you know, they're all going to be senators and presidents.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But I couldn't do it.
No.
Like, and you couldn't allow me to do it. And that was it. And that was just the rule in our D&D character sheet. It was just no skipping.
Yeah. No doubt about it.
All right. Last thing we'll wrap up on.
Yeah.
This show is obviously a very confessional
and personal,
a very personal show.
Mm-hmm.
I think people would very much enjoy you relating a wild story from your youth on the show.
Oh.
Maybe a college story or something. I know that Don't you have a story about how your roommate wrecked your car that has, you know, involves sex and drugs on some level?
Yeah. But that wasn't really me. But that's actually better to speak about somebody else.
No, come on. Tell one about yourself. Failing. Though. Did you ever like OD or something?
No. Okay. I never did anything like that. And as a matter of fact, as much as I was easily impressionable in my young teenage years, and I saw and I observed a lot of different things. After all, it was the 70s in South Florida, and drugs ran rampant everywhere. So I eyes wide open, I saw a lot of things. And I kind of made certain decisions about, venturing into those areas that I would not, cross that line, and I stuck to that.
What were your rules? What were your hard and fast drug rules?
I
glow bugs, never, drug rules. Listen
never,
up.
Never, ever,
number
ever,
one.
I never did any of the hallucinogenic drugs.
Never acid?
Never. Never, because they said that it would cause birth defects, and I knew someday I wanted to have children.
You wanted to have kids.
I wanted to have normal children. I didn't want them to have birth defects.
I don't
think
that's true, though.
I don't know. What happened? No. I don't know. What do you think?
Oh, no. I think, no, but I don't think, is that still a thing about hallucinogens with birth defects?
I mean, at the time they said, don't smoke pot because it will lead to harder drugs and you'll wind up being a criminal. You know, I always did things that made sense.
Yeah.
I mean, everything from religions to drug, everything, it had to make sense to me.
Yeah.
It didn't make sense. I couldn't, it didn't compute in my head.
Sure. So, all right. So number one, no hallucinogens.
No hallucinogens.
What are your other drug commandments?
I also never, ever, ever, ever injected anything into my...
No needles.
No needles. Absolutely. Never, ever, ever, ever.
Did you have you had friends that were regular intravenous drug users?
Not really friends, but I had acquaintances.
People that
actually,
you knew. That,
it was somebody that I actually observed injecting heroin or something into their arms, and it so dramatically affected me that I swore I would never.
So you watched somebody.
Shoot
up.
Yes. And it just totally...
Where? Set the scene. Set the scene of 1970s South Florida.
Wow. It was right off of Sunrise Boulevard, right off of 95, just as you're going east on Sunrise Boulevard. There was a little park off to the right-hand side, and this apartment of whoever lived there was right across the street. And we walked from the park across Sunrise Boulevard.
So you're just bullshitting on like a weekend or something?
Yeah.
Or?
We went into that little apartment and I watched him inject something into... I have no idea even what he was injecting. I have no idea. All I know
was
is
it
that
just it, you two or a bunch of friends?
No, it was just me and him and maybe another person or two. I don't really remember, but...
Did he offer?
No, I don't
think
so.
It's kind of a dick move.
No, I mean, it was like... I think I had already shared
expressed,
that I didn't...
Yes.
I wasn't interested.
Sure.
And it's not like he was pressuring me or anything, but I watched him shoot up and it just... It totally freaked me out. I just, I swore to myself...
It seems like a bit of a public display to do it. Like, not do it in the bathroom or something.
Yeah, I just swore I would never, ever do that.
It
was just...
It looked weird.
Thing. Yeah, it was not my thing.
All right, so there we go. No hallucinogens.
And
no IV drug use. Is there anything? I mean, like, we got to have some positive, like rules on using drugs. They can't all just be don't do drugs.
No, I mean,
is there any,
like
beer before liquor or,
I mean,
you only want to get so high or.
You know, when you're a.
How to survive.
A teenager and you. In those days, again, remember that the drinking age was 18, not 21.
Yeah.
So even though I was 17, I had a false ID and I was able to get into bars and I was able to drink. And, things were a lot freer. There weren't DUI laws and.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, things.
So what happens if you, like, crashed into a car and you were wasted?
You know, I don't know. It just wasn't a big... It wasn't the same as it is today.
Yeah.
It wasn't monitored the same. It wasn't as...
We're more socially active about that.
Yeah. And, the bottom line was, is as a teenager, you're always, like, standing on the edge of the cliff, you know, with, like, half your foot and all your... all your toes and just your heel hanging on.
Yeah.
And you're always willing to take that risk because that's just the age. Yeah. At that age, you're 17, 18 years old and you're fearless.
Sure.
Nothing can happen. Nothing can go wrong. And, you know, all you want to do is prove to your parents that, you know, your fears and your stupid rules are ridiculous.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's just part of, it doesn't matter whether it was in the 70s or even the 30s or the, you know, 2010s and 15s. I mean, it's just the mindset of a teenager from age like 15 to about 20, where you are absolutely invincible.
Yeah.
And then that says I was just like everybody else. And it was, again, the 70s, the ages of, you know, sex, drug, and rock, rock and roll. And
all right, so no IV drug use.
Yeah.
No hallucinogens.
No.
So thumbs up on Coke.
I tried Coke.
Sure.
I didn't really care for it because it kind of made me a little bit too, you know, hyper. And I didn't really like that. But I, you know, I tried some cannabis and I liked it. And that was a nice, comfortable.
What do you
feeling.
Think about the fact that, like the from where in the perspective that you were in the 70s when things were a little bit looser to it getting like really like far tighter, and now it kind of seems like it's loosening up again with like you know pot kind of being sort of like legal.
I just feel like it's about time. It's about
yeah,
time.
Right?
I mean, it should have happened years ago. I mean, it's like I think that. Cannabis is much less harmful than alcohol, quite frankly.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's better for people. I think it's healthier. I think it's still relaxing. I think it helps people, you know, wind down at the end of the day. And I think it makes them less aggressive.
Makes
and
them relax so they can do their son's podcast.
Our society needs to be a little bit less aggressive.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm a big proponent of it.
All right. Well, there we go. Vote green. Vote green, says Glowbug Young. Mom, is there anything else that you would like? You have the floor to the jury faithful audience. Is there any motherly wisdom? Because listen, everybody, you know, makes relationships on the podcast, you know, and people who I've never met, I consider friends and they hopefully consider me their friend, which means that you are a lot of people's friends, mom. You give advice to all my friends all the time. You love following their lives.
I do.
What is your maybe one piece of motherly advice that you would like to give out to everybody listening?
Believe in yourself.
Hey, look at that. Succinct. She's not going on a...
Believe in yourself.
She's not going on a monologue.
DIY. DIY. Believe in yourself. That's
See?
It.
Short and sweet,
yeah.
Unlike the son that she produced. all right, folks, that's going to wrap it up for the jury show. You can, of course, follow us at Justin R. Young on Twitter, Justin Young on Facebook, Justin R. Young on Snapchat, Instagram, and Periscope. If you'd like to email the show, justinrobertyoung@gmail.com. Put jury in the subject line. That's J-U-R-Y. And we will be doing another bonus feedback episode because I want to make sure that I get the emails out because we've got some amazing ones that have been sent in and we will be doing that. Until next time, though, this is your old pal Justin Robert Young and his mom,
Gloria
Glowbug Young, saying that if you find yourself in times of trouble, in a dark corner of your life for which you never think will escape, remember our two clarion voices yelling down to you, please don't die.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.